Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Payments News. My name is Cindy and today is March 13, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments in fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about PaySafe, MasterCard Extend Partnership. Buy now, pay later spending is set to double by 2023 in Australia FIS study. Acuity takeover bolsters payment processing tech. Small businesses in focus for B2B fintechs and their investors. Approaching trade finance from the payables side. India unwraps its commercial card opportunity. Now let's get started. PaySafe, MasterCard Extend Partnership. PaySafe, a specialized payments platform, has announced an expanded strategic partnership with MasterCard. The new agreement is designed to support PaySafe's growth and card acceptance in the European Economic Area (EEA), with a particular focus on PaySafe's card issuing solutions, including its Skrill prepaid MasterCard and NETELLER Net Plus prepaid MasterCard. The partnership will see MasterCard support PaySafe's product development and innovation, such as digital enablement for its services, FinTech Finance reports. The focus of the collaboration will include enabling digital payment methods like Apple Pay and Google Pay. Buy now, pay later spending is set to double by 2023 in Australia FIS study. UK-based InTech FIS has released the FIS 2020 Global Payments Report detailing a stark rise in Australia's BNPL purchases. The WorldPay from FIS 2020 Global Payments Report shows BNPL schemes, which allow users to spread out repayments over regular, often fortnightly, installments, are the hot spending ticket for 2020 and beyond. Raw data from the report reveals the market share of this payment method has increased from 3% of all e-commerce transactions in 2018 to 8% in 2019, and is forecasting just over double that growth again by 2023. If 17% of online transactions will be happening via BNPL in 3 years, that means about 1 in 5, more than 4 million people, will be using it as their preferred payment method across the country. The appeal of it is, generally, convenience. Upfront payment isn't required when using BNPL, and repayments are made in even installments that are ideally easy to manage. The report data shows a forecasted downturn from a combined 2019 credit and debit card e-commerce market share of 46% to just 28% in 2023. Mozo's 2019 report also recorded almost half of respondents giving their credit cards the flick in favor of BNPL services. Cash and cards still rule in store though, dominating point of sale purchases at 87% in 2019 with a less dramatic forecasted dip to 79% in 2023. Acuity takeover bolsters payment processing tech. With the acquisition of Apply Financial, Acuity wants to speed up payments for customers, it said in a statement Thursday, March 12. Terms of the deal were not released. Apply Financial's main product Validate, which allows customers to validate payments automatically, makes use of cloud technology to let firms submit the exact pinpointed numbers for bank accounts and payment details. The move is in line with the general trend toward faster payments. Customers and businesses expect generally quicker, easier ways to pay these days, which makes straight-through processing (STP) a competitive difference. Acuity is known for work in the fields of crime screening, payments and Know Your Customer solutions. The company has a portfolio called Banker's Almanac for payments, which works to deliver reliable information on bank and routing data. The acquisition of Apply Financial will help the company stay competitive. David White, Executive Vice President of Global Payments and KYC with Acuity, said the payments industry was in the throes of a massive transformation, and, as speed is one of the primary things customers look for, the acquisition would help Acuity stay competitive in that industry. Mark Bradbury, director at Apply Financial, looked forward to sharing knowledge and expertise and collaborating on new ideas to move things forward. But the speed of payments for B2B solutions still has a long way to go, with many paper checks still circulating at sluggish speeds, and high percentages of businesses requiring numerous different sign-offs before money reaches where it's going. By contrast, related fields like business-to-customer (B2C) and peer-to-peer (P2P) have become familiar with quicker, more accelerated solutions like instant, real-time payments. These days, more companies utilize functions like Credit as a Service (CaaS), which streamline and offer more channels for B2B providers. Small businesses in focus for B2B fintechs and their investors. With more than $93.7 million in new funding, B2B fintechs this week are finding support from investors embracing startups' focus on small to medium-sized business (SMB) finances, from banking to payments. Investment rounds poured in across Asia, North America, and Europe, with a Chinese corporate wallet securing the largest investment of the week. Below, PYMNTS rounds up the latest B2B fintech venture capital funding rounds. Moola Go. Singapore's multi-currency payments startup Moola Go revealed this week it secured an undisclosed investment from the Lippo Group as part of its pre-Series A round, according to a company announcement. The company, which initially focused on B2C and P2P payments but has since expanded into the B2B cross-border payments landscape, said the investment reflects heightened opportunities for fintech across Southeast Asia, and said it would deploy the investment to introduce new payment services to market, like mobile payments, as well as to launch in new geographic markets in the region. Checkfront. In Canada, Checkfront revealed its $9.3 million Series A investment led by Framework Venture Partners, while Pender Fund Capital Management, Conconi Growth Partners and Royal Bank of Canada also participated. Private Capital Journal reported that the company, which connects travel experience companies like Tours and Activities to its B2B software as a service (SaaS) booking management solution, will deploy the investment to focus on product development, talent acquisition, sales and marketing and strategic partnerships. The company enables travel providers to not only manage their booking, but it adds an array of back-office services, like inventory management and accounting integrations. FinCompare. In doubling its Series A funding round, Germany's FinCompare secured an additional $13.4 million in funding from ING Ventures, Speedinvest, Unica Ventures and several private investors, an announcement revealed. FinCompare enables SMBs to access a single portal upon which they can compare financing options across more than 250 banks, with the option of comparing credit, leasing, factoring and purchase financing offerings. The company's platform also connects with more than 1,000 financial advisors that use the portal for brokerage operations, reports said. Reports said FinCompare will use the cash to further build out its matching technology, predictive scoring, and customer relationship management system, and to invest in its software engineer team. Alma. Francis Alma is not a B2B payments company, but it soon will be. The firm raised about $14 million from IDInvest and Izay for its point-of-sale financing technology that allows an e-commerce or brick-and-mortar merchant to get paid in full upon making a sale, while enabling a buyer to pay their balance over time. According to reports in tech.eu, the company said it is planning to eventually launch B2B payment installation capabilities. North One. The U.S. is not known for its challenger banking community, but one rare player in the market, North One, recently secured $21 million in new funding for its banking solutions geared toward SMBs and freelancers. The Series A was led by Battery Ventures, while Redpoint Ventures and Tom Williams also participated. North One offers users cash and check deposits via ATM, supplier payment, expense software integration, accounting and e-commerce solutions. With the new funding, North One said it would focus on marketing, customer acquisition, and product and engineering talent acquisition. Fenbeitong. Dubbed a corporate wallet, China's Fenbeitong offers business customers an expense management suite of solutions, including physical and virtual cards, spend controls and analytics tools. The company announced a $36 million Series B+ funding round from 8 Roads, Ribbit Capital, Gladebrook Capital, Bitrock Capital and existing investors IDG Capital, Credit Ease Industry Fund and China Growth Capital, reports in China Money Network said this week. With the new funding, Fenbeitong said it plans to augment its existing offering and to invest in research and development, while also focusing on deeper integrations in corporates' back offices. Approaching trade finance from the payables side. Trade finance is a critical tool in supporting global trade for both buyers and sellers, particularly smaller businesses. Yet these financing products aren't without their risks and drawbacks, and today, criticism continues to mount for certain invoice financing tactics in particular. High-profile corporate collapses and questionable invoice discounting programs run by major conglomerates has led financial officials in the UK, US, Australia and beyond to take a closer look at products like factoring and supply chain finance. Yet when used responsibly, supply chain finance, a process in which financing is approached from a buyer's accounts payable AP side, not from the supplier's accounts receivable R side, can be effective at promoting healthy cash flow for both ends of a B2B trade transaction. Raul Esqueda, president of supply chain financing company First Commercial Credit, recently spoke with PYMNTS to explore the benefit of financing corporates' payables at a time when invoice factoring on the receivable side remains the go-to trade financing strategy for many businesses today. An alternative to factoring. Factoring can be a helpful cash flow management tool for suppliers, although it's not without its own criticisms. Opponents argue factoring and other invoice financing solutions perpetuate the ability for a corporate buyer to extend payment terms and delay payments, forcing a vendor to turn to a third party to finance unpaid receivables. Increasingly, Esqueda said, he's also seeing more B2B vendors unable to participate in factoring programs. We're running into a lot of suppliers that already have lines of credit at a bank, and they've already pledged their receivables to that bank, so they can't go to an invoice factoring company, he said. Now you have a perfectly good supplier capped out with their line of credit, and they have a buyer that doesn't really want to accelerate payment on their behalf. Not every corporate buyer can pay an invoice early, even with an early payment discount, he added. Factoring also runs significant risk for financiers in instances like chargebacks, trade disputes, fraud, returns and more. A supplier who accidentally delivers the wrong product may have already obtained financing on an unpaid invoice, but thanks to the mistake, that vendor won't be getting paid anytime soon or perhaps ever, leaving that financier to face losses. Reshifting the risk. Supply chain finance programs face the same risks that invoice financing initiatives do. Esqueda likened a trade payables financing program to that of a credit card. If a buyer finances a payables, but an order is wrong, that buyer is still on the hook to repay the financier. While risk is mitigated somewhat in that supply chain finance requires buyers to authorize the release of payment to a vendor, much like a buyer will still have to pay a credit card bill even if something goes wrong with their purchase, Esqueda also noted that there are ways financiers can further limit their exposure to mishaps and financial losses. Much of the controversy surrounding supply chain financing today stems from the critique that banks can sometimes finance payables for a corporate buyer that is cash-strapped and unable to pay the bills. Esqueda emphasized the importance of financiers only working with companies that use payables financing as a cash flow management tool, and not a way to fill in cash flow gaps. They need to have sufficient cash, they need to be financially strong, he said. You can't be doing this with buyers struggling to pay their bills. A lot of supply chain finance companies are getting in trouble because they are financing buyers that need money. The mindset behind this tactic, he said, is that many financiers rely too heavily on trade credit insurance products, assuming that if a buyer is unable to pay up, insurance will pay out. But in times of market disruption, trade credit insurance providers will eventually drop policyholders as the instance of deals that fall through grows more frequent. Removing the friction. Escada said he's seeing trade credit insurance providers pulling back from the oil industry as travel restrictions and coronavirus fears suppress demand and dampen prices. It's only one example of the broad-reaching implications of the coronavirus on B2B trade and corporates' cash flow management strategies, while certain industries like retail are facing their own particularly volatile moments in history. As such, financiers must be especially stringent in their due diligence and underwriting processes. But if approached responsibly, supply chain finance programs can play a significant role in helping businesses endure market disruptions. In addition to proper underwriting processes, Escada also noted that supply chain financing firms must also do everything they can to remove friction for all parties involved. That means ensuring buyers actually have vendors willing to offer discounts on their invoices, limiting the amount of paperwork parties must complete, and integrating into buyers' existing AP workflows and suppliers' invoice data without the need for clients to build their own application programming interfaces, APIs. You have to simplify the process, he said. India unwraps its commercial card opportunity. Despite its demonetization policy, a thriving e-commerce climate, and continued growth in electronic and mobile payments, card penetration remains especially low in India, hovering at about 2% to 3%. Compare that to the US, where penetration is upwards of 80%. Yet in only the last few months and even weeks, India's fintech startup community has seen a proliferation of commercial card innovation. It's an interesting phenomenon, especially considering the path to corporate card adoption elsewhere. For instance, in the US, despite a high prevalence of credit cards, corporate cards still make up only a small fraction of B2B payments volume. Yet in India, innovators appear to be banking on corporates to drive card adoption, despite consumers' low use of the payment tool. One of those innovators is Carbon Card, which recently announced new funding for its commercial card designed specifically for startups. In a recent conversation with PYMNTS, Carbon Card CEO and co-founder Pei Fu She said there are a few factors behind India's recent surge in commercial card interest. A lot of startups in India see similar innovations in the US or elsewhere, and come back to India and look for something similar, he said. The startup ecosystem in India is quite close-knit, and when a few start using a corporate card, their peers will start using it. India's highly fragmented banking ecosystem also presents an opportunity for newer, more agile financial service providers to wield the corporate card as a competitive edge, he added, pointing to older financial institutions, FIS, that have kept barriers to corporate card adoption particularly high for startups. The personal guarantee and beyond. The need for banks to obtain a personal guarantee from a small business or startup owner in order to issue a corporate credit card is one of the biggest hurdles SMBs face in both India and around the world. But it's only the start of the barriers that India's startup community faces when in search of a card product. She highlighted India Bank's requirement of a fixed deposit guarantee as well, mitigating the risk against default. As a result, the corporate cards that startups are able to obtain rarely operate as a credit instrument. For instance, if you want a $1,000 credit line, you would have to deposit $1,100 in the bank, he explained. Essentially, it's not credit per se, but more of a debit card in nature. Banks don't want to run any risk, they want to make money if you default. Finally, the third biggest barrier for startups is the need to submit a high volume of paperwork, with each bank requiring unique sets of information, often requiring boards of directors to sign off at the time of application. With all of these hurdles combined, Shea said most startup founders simply end up relying on their personal credit cards to operate their companies. The shift from personal to corporate. There are obvious drawbacks to relying on personal payment tools for professional expenses, with one of the largest being a lack of clear distinction of the purpose of transactions when businesses close the books at the end of each month. The knock-on impacts are vast, from a lack of transparency into spending patterns to derailed cash flow forecasting. The benefits of separating personal from professional spend are immediate as well, with Shea pointing to the wasted time and resources spent manually identifying which purchases were made for a company, or doling out expense reimbursements for employees. This is especially important for startups, which are often strapped for cash yet have some critical purchases to make. According to Shea, there are four key categories of purchases for which startups need a commercial card: software, marketing, cloud infrastructure, and travel. All of these expenses require a credit card, he said. Startups can't pay for, say, Facebook through a wire transfer. Facebook doesn't accept that. Even as India works to expand access to capital for startups and small businesses through policy initiatives and elevated competition from alternative and non-bank lenders, the commercial card's nature as both a line of credit and a payment vehicle makes it immensely valuable for startups that not only need working capital, but also need to be able to easily make payments for the necessities. A different trajectory to adoption. Considering India's current financial services climate, the country could see a very different path to commercial card adoption than what's seen in the US, where corporate card use is largely driven by a desire for businesses to pay via cards the same way they do as consumers. Market fragmentation and a high population of underbanked people mean consumers in India are instead flocking to mobile wallets rather than credit cards, which Shea said are largely reserved for wealthier individuals. And with India's fintech scene among the world's most active, Shea said it's time for corporate cards to take hold as more banks are eager to collaborate with fintechs to compete. India's banking industry is a highly fragmented market. Younger, smaller banks have to find a way to compete against larger established incumbents, he said. One way to do that is to work with fintechs like us. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again PayCademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.